This place must be very, very clean. I ask and request and demand that public services get on as much as possible immediately. News of the day. Prime Minister Burnham to give assurances to the Guyanese living in Great Britain, England, or the United Kingdom, said that it is indeed evident that in the oppressive conditions of England, your life is no bed of roses. It has brought considerable wrath from the British in what they consider an intrusion into their affairs, the lackey of USA. That was the advice they got from the Prime Minister, Forbes Burnham, who has been consistently faithful to the causes of blacks and other minorities throughout the world. Mr. Burnham, as you know, visited some time ago the Soviet Union, North Korea, East Germany, and England. Burnham's call to the Guyanese and other black Caribbeans and Indian Caribbeans in England was to tell it like it is to the world. His letter was read to nearly 1,000 people at the Kensington Town Hall in London. Gathering of blacks and Asians, Indians, minorities who are protesting the mounting racism and neo-fascism that is sweeping United Kingdom or England. As you know, the prospects are likely that there will be a conservative government. The Labour Party will be put out in the fall, meaning that one white woman, Margaret Thatcher, has promised the electorate that she will expel all people of color from her country and bar any immigrants of color into England, a fascist reactionary measure of the first magnitude. Anyway, Britain came back with firm criticisms and stated that life under Dr. Burnham and his PNC, People's National Congress, was no picnic. England criticized power failures that the Guyanese people had suffered some weeks ago, which have not been very evident of late. Prime Minister Burnham fired back that while he had been in London, there were a series of blackouts at the hotels and in the sector of London, one of the major modern capitals of the world, where he stayed and his delegation stayed. He said the risk of crime to the persons of his delegation was higher than in Georgetown. The poverty was noticeably more because of the terrible weather that USA and England has. The old people were suffering considerably more than this so-called modern capitalist state that has been in existence almost since time immemorial. They referred also to the policy of Burnham banning certain food imports which Guyana can produce locally. Some food items would not appear again on the shelves in Guyana, said English newspapers in scathing attacks against Burnham. England and USA are close allies, as you know, thus indicating the mood, no doubt, of the reactionaries in USA. The English papers said that such commodities would never be available again. Burnham said they can be produced and will be produced in Guyana. Prime Minister Burnham said a country like Guyana had no right to import saltfish from white rich corporations when it has vast marine resources, and with its agricultural resources should and will have no future food problems, while England will be faced with real dire emergencies in food. Black eye, he said, had once been imported into Guyana. When its importation was stopped, black eye was grown both for local consumption and for export. That's borne out today in Guyana news with 3,000 bags coming in from the interior to J.P. Santos, one of the largest distributors and friends of People's Temple, for utilization of the people in the Georgetown area. Prime Minister Burnham said Guyana, as a developing nation with a socialist perspective, will not sit down and merely complain. Guyanese in Britain, as you know, recently presented Prime Minister Burnham with a plaque to mark the deaths of 11 Guyanese who died when a CIA element sabotaged Cubana airliner, which plunged into the sea off Barbados, killing 73 persons on October over a year ago, in 1976, in fact. Other news. The government of the PNC, with its new referendum in hand, giving it the power to strengthen its constitution and establish a socialist government with firm power to rule, has given the High Court judge a mandate to deal harshly with all people caught stealing from public agencies. Comrade Backus, one of the people in the Demerara Tobacco Company that was formerly held by white capitalists and now is owned by the government of Guyana, the people of Guyana, is saying that the lack of collective concern has resulted in a substantial loss of production in the tobacco industry, a problem that some see here in Jonestown, who have little concern, it seems, for your own property, when you can see more direct results than any collective on earth. And it's really dreadful. You're cutting yourself off from all kinds of opportunities, movies, entertainment, music that could be gotten, increased variety of foods, because you do not work at your capacity and you will not take responsibility for the waste that goes on. In surveying last evening, I hear that there's waste in many areas, that some mechanics replace new parts that could be actually rebuilt, that we have waste in the fields has been heard for days, where people will pass over, do damage, cut vital plants. We must demand and do an urgent review, as the Demerara Tobacco Board, nationalized by the socialist government, is demanding a increase in production beyond all of the previous records, even when it was privately owned. Guyana is celebrating a national holiday tomorrow, the birthday of the African freedom fighter and all of those held in political exile in Union of South Africa and Rhodesia. Particularly, tomorrow is the birthday of one Nelson Mandela that has been held without trial, no jury trial, imposed dictatorship. The Union of South Africa has placed one Nelson Mandela in jail in 1964, and he has never had a review by the courts. This horrible fascist regime is being taken on head-on in more brave manners than we have seen heretofore in Guyana. The Guyana Broadcasting Network called the regimes of Rhodesia under Ian Smith, white, who's imposing his rule on blacks, even though they're outnumbered, whites 14-1, the same in Africa, where 87%, nearly 9 out of 10 are people of color. Guyana called the regimes of Smith and Worcester dictators, the dictator of South Africa, Smith, the dictator over Rhodesia, that is rightfully called Zimbabwe, where the true government is the Patriotic Front under Joshua Nkoma and Robert Mugabe. Guyana Broadcasting Network called them oppressive and fascistic. 200 teachers, which should be checked in by our radio to see if we're having any representative, are to participate tomorrow, I believe, in a seminar on diagnostic testing. We should have representative in this. One of the comrades that came through here, Mary Rogers, is participating. She was such a beautiful woman. As you remember, she told how under white rule, U.S. and British rule here, even her own household, the lighter-skinned sisters of hers went to one school, and brothers. She told of how she was beaten mercilessly with buggy whips by the white oppressor, and yet she was so beautifully sweet to all, white, black, whatever the race, as she worked her way through talking and touching and embracing people as one of the high board members of the People's National Congress, the vanguard of socialism, the ruling party that our Prime Minister Burnham belongs to, and the chairman of it is our good friend, the Deputy Prime Minister, Dr. Ptolemy Reed. Management is given a mandate over Guyana Broadcasting Network by the government to get out of bureaucracy, paper writing, memorandums, and get involved with the people, cut down cost, and involve themselves on the equal level with their workers in all of the socialist nationalized factories, industries, and stores. This mandate was issued from the Prime Minister's office. As I said, the High Court will not stand by and see, in the words of Guyana Broadcasting Network, and see agencies of government line their pockets with money meant for the poor. In Guyana's solid effort, as Guyana Broadcasting Network said, to bring equality economically to all people in this great country of Guyana. An adult education associate official in charge of adult education in Guyana was demanded to repay, make restitution for some $2,400 that she had fraudulently misused, and if she does that within a certain few days, she will be given time off because she'll be on probation. She has never been previously sentenced. But her name is being held up to what Guyana Broadcasting Network called public ridicule. Korean reunification, which is, of course, contrary to the interest of USA, because USA cruelly divided Korea. All the people prefer the People's Democratic Republic of North Korea. USA came in to South Korea, imposed one of the worst dictators in history, who has thousands of political prisoners Many have disappeared, never to be seen again by their families, and have been cruelly tortured by the KCIA, an auxiliary of the dread CIA of U.S. imperialism. A new meeting is being held and highly broadcast over Guyana Broadcasting Studios in New Amsterdam Town Hall for 4 p.m. this afternoon. I do not know whether it's possible. The radio could check if any of our persons could be possible to be there to make it known that we are there. The socialist constitution is moving fastly ahead. Different committees are formed under the direct guidance of the Prime Minister and cabinet members to bring about the guarantees and the referendum of a purely socialist constitution, said Guyana Broadcasting Studios. A bill is being introduced to extend the life of Parliament for 15 months. Even the opposition, PPP, as well as the PNC. This, of course, would forestall elections for 15 months, which in this climate well could be in the best interest of national unity. A large delegation of youth from the Guyana National Services, the commander, who has been very friendly to us and said, in fact, that the entire Guyana National Services has modeled many of its efforts after Jonestown. And other youth from various sectors of Guyana are headed for Cuba in a few days for an international festival of solidarity of socialist nations, and particular emphasis will be upon solidarity of socialist nations in the Caribbean, which of course would mean only Guyana, Cuba, and Jamaica struggling as they are under the bondage of the International Monetary Fund. Zambia, though, who has been in the position of having to apply for International Monetary Fund aid, as you know, yesterday, made some sharp, very sharp statements about USA. So they've not been intimidated. Unfortunately, Jamaica did not have as strong a hold on its means of production and means of distribution, and therefore was much more vulnerable to the manipulations of the monopoly capitalist from Europe and North America that control the International Monetary Fund. International Monetary Fund has been resisted in Guyana on the basis that they will not allow foreign domination of any productive areas. They will not allow meddling in their banking system, and up till now have refused all efforts of IMF to devalue their money. Economic summit meeting continues in Bonn, West Germany, that prides itself on being the inheritor of Adolf Hitler, the barbarian's Third Reich. This includes Japan, West Germany, Italy, USA, Canada, England, and France. The news of Guyana Broadcasting Studios says that the great seven capitalists are faced with economic stagnation and mass unemployment due to the growing protectionism. At this point, it is not determined whether Japan, who has the surplus, the one nation that is prospering more than the rest, selling more than they're buying, that is, exporting more than they're importing, whether they've agreed to change any of their protectionist policies. Other minor capitalist nations, such as Australia, are reacting to the European common market, who Australia accuses of showing no interest in the welfare of other capitalist nations. So protectionism is growing in the European common market, in Japan, and USA's Carter fears that it will be a reaction, there'll be a reaction of protectionism which was characteristic of the history prior to World War I in USA. Carter expressed some hope that they will be able to avoid any major breakdown of the capitalist economic system in the next months ahead. The Arab nations, the oil elite, particularly OPEC, are threatening again to review prices. No commentary on that. No basis was given. It perhaps is over the recent developments in Yemen that have not been resisted by USA, and the Arab League, made up of feudalistic monarchies, are very, very concerned over the fact that the Organization for African Unity, made up of 49 leading nations of Africa, the heads of state today, in spite of great pressure from USA, which was getting great pressure from the Arabs to impose sanctions and an indictment of the Cuban freedom fighters that have gone into Africa, the 49 nations refused. In a clear, vast majority, they refused to make any resolution condemning Cuba in Africa, and in fact made a resolution that each and every African state can call on Cuba or any other nation that will assist them in liberation from oppression whenever and at whatever time they choose. The 49 nations have been meeting in Khartoum overlooking the beautiful Nile, the foreign ministers. Now, this week, the heads of state of the 49 leading African nations will meet. This vote and decision was a clear setback to USA policy. Today, being that Zambia so bravely yesterday stood up to U.S. imperialism and defended Cuba's right in involvement in Africa and defended the African unity forces, that a Pan-African force should be set up to help with the liberation of the blacks under the oppressive USA-supported Union of South Africa and Rhodesia. Where is Zambia? South Central Africa. To the northwest is Zaire, where one of the few puppets that are left in Africa prevail. And even he distrusts the white man, Mobutu Sisiko. To the northwest is Zaire. To the northeast is Tanzania, who blistered USA last week for its oppressive colonialistic policies. To the east is Malawi, M-A-L-A-W-I. Southeast is the Marxist pro-Soviet state of Mozambique, M-O-Z-A-M-B-I-Q-U-E. To the south, the white racist regime of Ian Smith and Rhodesia that the black people proudly call Zimbabwe. And also to the south is Botswana, that was considered a safe little puppet territory of Union of South Africa, but it has given a clear course of independence from that dread regime and has spoke out with increasing demands for liberation of all blacks in South Africa. To the west, the Angolan Socialist Republic, pro-Soviet country, was freed with direct intervention of Cuban forces when it was being oppressed by USA. The CIA was working clandestinely, and unfortunately, China, with its horrid foreign policy, was also supporting the capitalist and very biased religious nationalist opposition in Angola. How was Zambia created? Part of the empire built by Cecil Rhodes. Northern Rhodesia became a British protectorate in 1924. Cecil Rhodes' son, by the way, was killed going through Rhodesia recently. He was killed by activists of the Patriotic Front for still trying to promote white rule and white racism. His only heir, Cecil Rhodes, the great magnate, colonialist, corporate leader, man of wealth, who had the name Rhodesia, the country of Rhodesia was named after that oppressor, Cecil Rhodes. Anyway, Northern Rhodesia became a British protectorate, so-called, a colonial possession, really, in 1924. In 1953, the area was made part of the Federation of Rhodesia and Nyasa Land, N-Y-A-S-A-L-A-N-D. But extensive agitation led to its independence, in spite of U.S. and British opposition, on October 24, 1964. At which time Northern Rhodesia became the Republic of Zambia, Z-A-M-B-I-A. The people preferred to have their country named after the Zambezi, Z-A-M-B-E-S-I, river, rather than the detested and hated racist colonialist Cecil Rhodes. What is the size of our sister nation Zambia in Africa? 290,586 square miles. You can get an idea there. About four times larger than Guyana. But unfortunately, it has many times more, five to six times larger population. Its population is 4,850,000, as opposed to 800,000 in Guyana, in the rich, fertile area with 83,000 square miles here. What is its population breakdown? Mostly African, the Bantu, B-A-N-T-U tribes, which are 98.5%. European white constitute 1.1% and are treated very well. Other races are only 0.4%. Mostly animist, people who revere nature in their religion, but with over 15% Christian and some Hindus and Muslims. But for the most part, this great people has kept its native religion of animism and has resisted the imposition of racist religious elements as Hinduism, the Muslims, and particularly white Christianity. Who rules? President Kenneth Kaunda, K-A-U-N-D-A, been a good friend of Prime Minister Burnham, who was elected by universal adult democratic vote, universal adult suffrage. The Legislative Assembly has 105 members, 100 elected by universal suffrage, and 5 nominated by the President. As you know, Zambia has been put under heavy pressure by U.S. imperialists as Carter dumped cheaply a surplus that USA had of copper to reduce the copper prices on the world market, and Kaunda had been unfortunately not diversified enough in its economy, and its entire economy depended upon copper. But amazingly, it has survived and still stands up bravely against the imposition of USA and Britain. Who really rules? Kaunda has arranged for the gradual national takeover of foreign-owned copper mining companies and foreign oil production companies. Zambia has nationalized billion-dollar industries, causing disputes with Britain and USA and other capitalist foreign investors, which often had to be settled by third parties and UN teams in a determined effort to gain economic independence, in spite of almost being broken by the manipulations of the copper market by U.S. imperialism. Millions of dollars in aid come from, in the past, from USA and particularly Britain, its lackey, and other Western capitalist nations. A $10 million loan from Peking, China, however, is being added to the contributions of Peking, Peking engineers are also helping to build highways and bridges for Zambia. Zambia remains non-aligned, and we are finding here information that shows China is putting assistance into some of these brave African nations. I guess her fear of Soviet domination has caused her to behave rascally on the foreign policy scene in Zaire and Angola and Ethiopia. But we're seeing more and more Chinese aid coming in. We hope this represents a wind of change. The first self-governing legislative elections were held in January of 1964. 95% of the population in Zambia voted. Some walked as far as 20 miles in the rain to reach the polls. They have a lot more rain than we do, even in Zambia. A thumb dipped in red ink prevented people from voting twice. The people voted by symbol for the parties of their choice. Lion, Corn Cob, are home. Kenneth Kaunda's whole party was victorious, and when he became president in October, he was firm. He told a group of labor leaders, "This government is strong and here to stay. I do not want to hear any more nonsense from anyone about bringing back colonialism or capitalism." David Livingstone, the Scottish Christian missionary and explorer, went to Zambia more than a century ago. A century is 100 years. And was horrified at the slaving he witnessed. Blacks were terrorized, their families broken up as they were led off by the Arabs, the whites, Muslims, you see. There's no difference between Muslims and Christians, contrary to what Wallace D. Muhammad and the Nation of Islam has tried to say in the USA. Arab Muslims were in the primary marketing of slaves there. Livingston, one of those more benevolent Christians, who immediately vowed to end the trade where he could, tried to replace the slave trade with general commerce in Africa. He spent his last days in Zambian country. When no one had heard much from him in about a year, the New York Herald Dispatch, newspaper that is now gone broke, dispatched a reporter whose assignment was simply to find Livingston. The reporter, Henry Morton Stanley, succeeded finally, coming upon the missing missionary at Lake Tanganyika, T-A-N-G-A-N-Y-I-K-A, where Stanley greeted him with the words, "Dr. Livingston, I presume. You've no doubt heard it in your school." He was the last white man to speak with Livingston, who died at the age of 60 on May 1st, 1873, of malaria, following an 8-month trek through disease-infested swamps. His chief bearer, Susi, S-U-S-I, insisted that the doctor be buried in England. His body was dried out for 2 weeks, then embalmed in brandy and salt. The bearers had the body shipped to Westminster after they had carried it to the sea. The trip to the African coast, which now takes 24 hours on an American-built highway, took them 9 months in those days. And probably Livingston didn't even want to go back to colonial England that was involved in this marketing of slaves as well as USA. Of course, USA continued the slave market even after England. On the 100th anniversary of Livingston's death, President Kaunda led 1,000 Zambians to Kipunda, C-I-P-U-N-D-U, where Livingston had died, to pay tribute to the Scotsman. Kaunda said, at that time, what dominated Livingston's life, though he was a white man, was his sense of mission as a servant of the people of Africa instead of the white lord they served. He did not see himself a leader in any sense at all, but a servant of the black people, and we shall always hold him near and dear to our hearts. That shows the great magnitude of black people able to overcome the pain that was inflicted one of the worst and cruel slave trades in history that came out of Zambia. Thus ends the commentary of the news for the day and a nation that you need to hear about. Also in the news, coming at the last moment, Yugoslavia is making some trade agreements. It's a non-aligned communist nation in Europe with Guyana, and last week it gave a $70 million loan to aid Burma in copper production and Burma's efforts to break away from dependence upon Western capitalist imperialism. Perhaps tomorrow we can discuss Yugoslavia. We must all show great interest in the news. It is important to show great interest in the news. Matter of fact, I think I shall give Yugoslavia. I don't think it is that long, and I can give it in the shorter form. Yugoslavia, where is it located? In southeastern Europe. Its embassy here has been very friendly to us and complimentary of the Jonestown pure communal experiment. In southeastern Europe, Yugoslavia is located across from Italy. It shares its borders with seven countries: northern Italy on the west, Austria and Hungary on the north, Romania and Bulgaria on the east, Greece and Albania on the south. To the southwest is the Adriatic Sea. How was it created? In the 6th and 7th centuries, several Slavic tribes migrated, some southward and some westward, over the Carpathians, Carpathians, into the area between the Danube, Danube, river, and the Adriatic Sea, Adriatic. It was not until 1918 that the various nationalities were allowed to unite to form an independent state, at that time called the Kingdom of Serbs, Croats, C-R-O-A-T-S, and Slovenes, S-L-O-V-E-N-E-S. There's always been a lot of prejudice, particularly from Germany, that twice tried to dominate the world against Southern Europeans. The prejudice exists in USA, too. People from Greece, Italy, Spain, Yugoslavia, and those areas are somehow inferior, like USA has considered blacks to be. What is its size? Barely larger than Guyana, 98,766 square miles, roughly the size of Wyoming, with not the fertile potential of this country. Its population, well, you can see there's no comparison. Guyana has 800,000 and 83,000 square miles, but the population of Yugoslavia is 21 million, nearly, in fact, 21,900,000. Of that, Serb are 42.1%. Croat, C-R-O-A-T, were still highly nationalistic, are 23.1%. Slovene are 8.6%. Macedonian are 5.6%. Muslim religion, 5.2%. Albanian, 4.9%. 16 other groups, 10.5%. All races. And there's a real integration in Yugoslavia of the races. 42% of the people are Serbian Orthodox, a religion of Christendom that you're not familiar. One of the many sects that show that there's no unity in Christianity. 25% are Roman Catholic, 10% are Muslim. And they have a reasonable religious peace, as we see in Guyana, one of the rare nations that has such. Who rules? A president, a collective presidency, a premier, a parliament, the Federal Assembly, and the cabinet, the Executive Council. The position of president has been changed due to the problem of President Tito's successor. He's 86 years, one of the bravest freedom fighters. He fought the Nazis. He's gone through many, many things, and he is very healthy at 86 years of age to show young people that socialists can live old and ripe age and still have great adventure in liberation of the people. The policy is to try to create the conditions for collective leadership after Tito's death. The 1971 Constitution established a 22-person collective presidency, while at the same time re-electing Tito, T-I-T-O, president for 5 years. Tito, of course, really is the principal ruler, with the other leaders of the League of Communists as his lieutenants. And since successfully leading the partisan forces during World War II, he won his own victory against Hitler. He drove them out single-handedly. He was a powerful guerrilla fighter. He has held ultimate power, of course, since that, as head of the party, the government, and the Socialist Alliance, the only other legal political party. There are two brands of socialism there, but both agree to the economics of socialism. And as a charismatic national hero who is never directly criticized, but plays the role of critic of the bureaucracy in favor of the people, a la Mao, says this capitalist criticism. Tito has enjoyed a kind of autocratic reign, though it's benevolent. Even the capitalists admit that. Though sharing his power with his comrades at arms, he's taken no financial advantage of the people, and the people have a high standard of living. The ruling clique of the party, of course, according to the capitalists, are the lieutenants around him, though no one accuses him of living much above his people. Joseph Broz, J-O-S-I-P, capital B-R-O-Z, who became Secretary General of the Yugoslav Communist Party in 1937, rose during World War II from relative obscurity to an international frame and fame as Marshal Tito, as he affectionately became called, leader of the aggressive resistance group, the Partisans. The group, ill-clad and nearly starved, all of them undernourished, fought against tremendous odds against Hitler and fascism that had been imposed by the Trilateral Commission to try to stop communism. Tito himself was wounded many times and narrowly escaped capture on several occasions. At the war's end, he was both a military hero and leader of the Anti-Fascist Political Alliance, the AVNOJ, with a large enough personal following to withstand the machinations of Soviet rule, which he considered to be hegemony in that day, who tried to have him ousted. Tito emerged as unquestioned leader of his country. He was alienated by Stalin. He's now drawing closer to the Soviet Union, though he's non-aligned. At first, Tito worship followed the patterns of Stalin worship in the USSR, but this was toned down due to the break with Stalin and criticism of the cult of the individual, which really began in Yugoslavia. Even the capitalists admit this. Of course, they're more kindly to non-aligned communists than they are the superpower of the Soviet Union, which is their arch enemy. And particularly, the cult of the individual, says the commentary, was resisted as it applied to Stalinism. Still, wherever he went in public, Tito was greeted with cheers and the chant, "Tito is ours, we are Tito's." His trivial acts have been chronicled in the newspapers and made very significant. Yet in the course of the spectacle of the rule, Tito has played many roles: benevolent father of the people, stern scolding uncle, critic of bureaucracy, simple man of the soil, world traveler, he's gone all over the world, comrade in arms of World War II days, dignified head of state. He does have a very nice car, say the capitalists. They chide him for that, a Rolls Royce. And finally, resplendent military leader on his white charger. He often wears a white uniform and rides a horse even in his 86 years. The supposed absence of class conflict in Yugoslavia is contradicted by capitalists, but they have to admit that there's a relative freedom because there's been over 2,000 strikes since 1958 for more advanced rights. In fact, the workers have a real hand in government of that state. The number of strikers increasing each year until the last 2 years in which they have been able to get enough benefits to satisfy the need of the workers, because the Yugoslav people are fiercely independent people. Now the ideologists are beside themselves trying to explain why the workers of that period struck against themselves. That's capitalist commentary. Well, they strike to improve, you know. They improve conditions and eliminate bureaucracy. It's significant the last 2 years there have been no strikes. Since all these strikes were supposedly illegal, wildcats, but nobody was thrown in jail. Capitalists don't note that contribution, so that shows a great deal of benevolence. And they were therefore difficult to control. There has been, of course, as I said, recent proposals to have the Communist Party run unions, organize, and lead them. And that has been adopted, and labor is really getting more benefits than many nations in the socialist bloc, because it is really a labor class nation. Non-aligned, helpful in peace settlements, helping in bridging the gaps. It's been critical of Chinese policy in Africa, though it had formerly been somewhat pro-Chinese. It's distinctly against China's foreign policy, and has been very friendly and has met in all recent Soviet Warsaw Pact conferences. Thus ends the commentary of the news, and two nations that you can learn about that are interesting. Much love. Remember to be prepared. There will be a test in People's Rally, which we cannot cheat. It will be representative and in-depth and fair, more fair than other tests, but it will be one which you will have to know. So be sure you go back and pick up all the knowledge on these nations. Ask the librarian what you miss, or ask Comrade Bernetta Christian, Secretary of News. Thank you, and I love you very much. We will announce what will be on television later tonight. Afternoon on this Monday, we need to give you more news. Seems like days are always like everything else in the universe that we do.